Julie, on today's podcast, we're going to be talking about our latest Pulse survey results, where we had responses from over 700 executives as they shared with us their approaches on the return to work and their workforce. So as the COVID impacts continue to play out, it's important for us to hear what these leaders are thinking.
Margie, I agree it's important to hear what they're thinking, and I know you're going to be moderating this episode. Some of the interesting things in addition to returning to work are the role technology is going to play. What about automation? What about ESG with a strong focus on diversity? So with all of that, Margie, let's talk tax.
You're listening to Tap Into Tax, PwC's podcast series covering current regulatory, legislative, and technology hot topics through the lens of our technical leaders, as well as process and technology subject matter specialists.
This podcast features discussions with some of our leading minds around tax, trade, and domestic policy. Stay tuned to our regular updates and subscribe to our series to get notified as new episodes are published. Hello, listeners, and welcome to Tap Into Tax. This is Margie Dunjashaw, and I'm a tax partner specializing in helping clients achieve more efficient tax reporting and strategy operations. I also lead many of our tax consulting teams. Today, I'm joined by Dom Megna and Eileen Mullaney. Dom advises companies as they transform their tax operations through the utilization of technology to make their tax function more efficient. Eileen assists clients to make sure their global mobility programs facilitate alignment with their organization's goals. On today's episode, we will discuss the tax leader insights from our PwC Executive Pulse Survey, or as we will be referring to it throughout this podcast, the Pulse Survey, which is tracking where business is headed and what peer companies are doing. So Dom and Eileen, thank you for joining me today.
Thanks, Margie. Happy to be here with you.
Thanks, Margie. Looking forward to the discussion.
So let's get started. Recently, PwC released the latest Pulse survey, which gathered responses from 750 executives, including CFOs, COOs, CHROs, and tax and risk leaders. This included insights from finance and tax leaders from the Fortune 1000 and private companies as well. So today we're going to explore tax hot topics and the perspectives of business leaders on the future of work and their related strategies. So Dom, big picture, what did business leaders tell us in the Pulse survey?
Well, Margie, they told us quite a bit, but let me share a few broad themes we noted, which focus on the challenges and opportunities that executives have identified. A majority of executives plan to have at least some portion of their workforce working in a hybrid format, which means partially in the office and partially remote. And that's going to start up this fall at some time. What we also learned was that half of some employees will be in person full-time and other employees will be in more of a hybrid and or a fully remote work environment. And then we also learned that a small fraction will have employees working in a hybrid-only model. From that, we also deduced that there's going to be some organizations that will remain fully remote, which means everyone working outside of a normal location environment. That made up a very small portion of the respondents, but still represents an understanding that organizations are thinking through how best to structure their work environments and giving people optionality around them. We also learned that 98% of executives say that the nature of their businesses allow for some form of remote work, as we just discussed. Of these, most view the loss of interaction opportunities, such as in-person corporate culture, mentoring, in-person meetings, and innovation, to be one of the biggest challenges to implementing a hybrid work environment. We do know over the next 12 to 18 months, almost half of executives plan to change their processes. Those will take the form of increased automation and documentation. We're not surprised by this, as there is a need to be less reliant on employee institutional knowledge as a result of the company's work experience during the pandemic. About 41% of those companies will change strategic planning based on changing business conditions. As we've identified in our survey, with regards to ESG goals, a majority of executives, somewhere around 60%, are focused on advancing internal diversity and inclusion efforts over the next 12 months as well. Other key areas in focus include rethinking communications on the company's purpose to attract talent, taking the leadership on encouraging employee vaccination against COVID-19, and improving reporting to external stakeholders on ESG issues.
Dom, there is so much for us to dive into. It is possible that we're living through a fundamental transformation in the way that we all work. So, for example, where we're located, how we get our work done, including the use of technology, the types of skills that employers are even required to have. So these changes are providing many opportunities for businesses to rethink their strategy and adopt new technology and processes. And it's also requiring that we upskill our people with the goal of being more efficient and more effective, even in a remote environment. I do suspect, though, that these efforts are coming with their fair share of challenges. So as companies are rolling out their workforce location strategies this fall, and many of them intended to roll them out sooner, but due to recent events, we're having to push back. Many are concerned about the various work challenges related to the success of the hybrid work model. And as Dom, you alluded to, it's going to be a big change. So Eileen, I'm going to come to you next. Can you expand on some of these concerns?
It's been interesting. Overall, executives have felt that remote work over the past year and a half has worked well. However, they do recognize that there have been some challenges for very specific activities. For example, onboarding new hires has been a bit of a challenge, especially fresh off campus, new hires at very junior levels. Collaboration and innovation is another area that executives have cited as a challenge, as well as developing relationships with new clients. As Dom mentioned, most executives say they are planning for a hybrid model, and this will include a mix of remote, in-person work as they start welcoming their employees back to the office, hopefully sometime this fall. When we talk about executing or operationalizing programs like this, this will look very different from company to company, including very fundamentally how an organization defines remote work. For some organizations, remote work could be working permanently remotely, no reliance on the office whatsoever. For some organizations, it could be a mix, some days in the office, some days at a home office. And a lot of organizations looking at a new concept of temporary remote, where you could work remotely for a specific period of time, 2 weeks, 4 weeks, maybe a little bit longer. So given how the definition of remote is really broadened over the past several months, there's definitely questions around how this can work for companies and what concerns that are very specific to hybrid models. As organizations think about their policy designs, they really need to address basic questions like, will these work arrangements permit cross-border hybrid activities or remote activities state-to-state, cross a state border? Will they allow country-to-country arrangements cross a country border? If these programs will only apply to their U.S. headquarters locations, or if they intend these programs to be rolled out globally? And again, none of these answers to any of these questions are right or wrong. It's just a matter of what is best for each organization. So I think as organizations think about standing up these programs and then implementing, they really do need to anticipate what some of the challenge might be from a regulatory perspective as they roll these programs out globally.
So Eileen, what are the pulse survey results indicating that these common challenges are?
The results are indicating the following. A majority of executives who were surveyed, including tax leaders, view the loss of interaction opportunities as a challenge, moderate or a major challenge. And that includes things like in-person corporate culture. How do they maintain the corporate culture with everyone on different schedules? Mentoring opportunities and innovation opportunities. Maintaining corporate culture is absolutely top of mind for executives. Another result from the survey was about 60% of the respondents consider the possibility of managers treating on-site workers and remote workers differently. How do they plan to determine which group should be working in person? And that is often done through a study of roles and positions. How are they thinking about unused office space? Or even the possibility that we could return to 100% remote work? Again, these are issues that they are seeing as moderate to major challenges going forward. While half the respondents view the impact of hybrid work on revenue growth to also be a moderate to major challenge, a similar portion also consider it a minor challenge or no challenge at all. So I don't think we see kind of consistency across all the respondents of how they view the impact on revenue growth. Fewer executives are concerned about having the technology tools to support remote work or having cybersecurity tools in place. And I think just in retrospect, a lot of companies have dealt with that issue over the past year and a half, ensuring that they had the right digital tools for their organization to continue to operate efficiently. Other responses from the executives included concerns about employee engagement and development, and also potentially increased turnover. In response to all of these concerns, leaders are looking for ways to promote company values, leadership, company culture, as well as improve connectivity and community, boost morale, and last but certainly not least, to increase employee productivity. Leaders are also very focused on their employees' well-being and encouraging members of the function to learn new skills using digital upskilling, immersive tools, but at the same time, really supporting and fostering creativity.
That's really interesting, Eileen, that the Pulse survey results seem to indicate that many companies are adopting a people-first approach to addressing these concerns. So can you talk a little bit more about how companies are addressing these changes, especially employee productivity in a hybrid or remote work environment?
Looking forward, companies are planning to provide employees with new or even updated features to help them be more productive. COOs in particular are highly focused on increasing opportunities for collaboration and networking throughout the organization, adopting and even expanding the use of digital collaboration tools, increasing efficiency through automation and other tools, as well as providing leadership coaching for managers. All of these options were ranked very high across the COO respondents. Companies are very focused on employee engagement, especially internal frequent pulse surveys, as many have found that there is a strong alignment between employee engagement and employee productivity. Many companies are beginning to roll out productivity initiatives that will address some of these areas I've just mentioned. Some solutions I'm seeing are productivity analysis, where organizations can help improve the experience, giving insights to where companies may need to redesign work processes. For example, determining if the employees can take care of themselves during the workday. I think many of us have found that it's not unusual that we have 6 or 8 hours of back-to-back meetings, and that can be a little bit challenging for all of us, whether you're in the office or at home. And an overloaded schedule leaves little or no time for employees to do their actual work. So we often find people are doing work long hours into the night. These tools can help analyze the employees' digital activities in aggregate, identify patterns that affect productivity and engagement. And over time, this can help managers encourage better and healthier workplace habits to really reduce the risk of burnout. Many companies are also focused on creativity solutions, making it easier for teams to work together, whether or not they're in the same room. Collaboration whiteboards have already been really successful, leveraged by work from home teams. And many of these tools can integrate well when you're using in-person brainstorming sessions. I think one of the really interesting ones is a collaboration suite. They're really emerging as the backbone of a hybrid workspace. Today's workers find themselves torn between lots of different communication platforms, from the phone to text to email to lots of different systems that will allow for discussion, brainstorming, and even chats. These collaboration suites will allow the employee to streamline and standardize all of this, getting everyone working in the same environment, helping to avoid an unhealthy us versus them, meaning who's working in the office and who's working remotely. Better yet, many of these collaboration suites will allow employees to build their own custom apps using low-code or even no-code tools that can be used within the collaboration site and shared with coworkers, and they will even integrate with existing back-office tools for a better workflow. So overall, as you can hear, technology will play a critical role in the success of any future of work program, as well as employees who have these range of tools at their disposal. These tools can boost productivity, help spur creativity, provide training, and facilitate virtual gatherings. I do want to point out that it is important to consider corporate culture, change management, and employee well-being through this process, through the implementation of these programs. And I do see companies rolling out these programs as a pilot so they can pivot or tweak approaches where needed.
Eileen, it's really good to hear that companies are thinking so creatively about how to increase productivity and teaming capabilities while still doing all this in a hybrid work model and making that work as seamless as possible. There's so many different ways that companies can approach all of these strategic needs. I think it's really important that they're considering all options that are available to them. So Dom, as we're talking about keeping all options on the table, what are some strategic business changes that executives are contemplating as part of their return to work strategies?
Companies are balancing changing workforce expectations with the strategic and operational shifts necessary to remain agile. And we asked executives about strategic business changes they will make over the next 12 to 18 months as a result of their company's work experience during the pandemic. And we got back some results that I'd love to take you through. So almost half of executives plan to change their processes to be less reliant on employee institutional knowledge, including a greater focus on process, automation, and documentation. Obviously, this was something I addressed a little bit earlier on, but this really requires first identifying the processes that have a lot of manual waste in them, or those that are undocumented, and then further identifying the programmatic solutions in the form of either enterprise-led or business user-level developed technologies. Leaders from all functional areas rank this as their top strategic priority over the next 12 to 18 months. Of that group, 41% responded that they are stepping up strategic planning around uncertainties such as inflation, consumer confidence, government policy, and ESG initiatives. This was less of a priority for tax leaders than any other functional area, but it still made up a large portion of some of the responses that we got back. And then finally, about one third of all of the executives are focused on major reorganizations of their tax function operating model, changing the location strategy, the roles and responsibilities, and thinking through whether an outsourcing, shared service, co-source model would make sense for their organization.
That's really interesting, Dom. I want to dig in a little bit about each of the strategies in a little bit more detail. So can you shed some light on how companies are transforming their processes and digitizing their functions to improve execution and drive efficiencies? How are these functions planning to approach this over the next year?
Well, Margie, as demand continues to evolve, digitization offers real opportunities for faster growth and greater productivity. The adoption of digital technology, such as automation, analytics, collaboration tools by a company can also improve the business processes, the value that it can provide to its customers, as well as just in general, innovation of the organization to have more efficient processes. But to be successful, companies must make digital investments wisely, be clear about their roles, and carefully manage change among employees. We asked a question very similar around these points in our poll survey. Tax leaders are focused on digitizing the tax function over the next year. And what we learned from them was somewhat interesting in the sense that one quarter will increase their investment in cloud and automation, one fifth will redesign their processes, and another one fifth will leverage internal enterprise IT teams, with the remainder spending time on more of the business-led or citizen-led tool sets. So this is a fairly even spread between all of these different categories. And the focus point has to be on where that tax function is trying to achieve in the coming year and trying to plan around that for the changes that would be most effectuate that change. While money companies may have already made improvements to their tax function ahead of or looking forward to the calendar year, those that aren't planning on doing so could be missing out on real opportunities. In our survey, we learned that the tax leaders who plan to maintain the status quo going into the next tax year and ignore opportunities to bring extensive transformation to tax aren't thinking as much about the opportunities and are more focused on how to get through the critical compliance needs of their function, which is an understandable approach, but doesn't allow for you to take advantage of the opportunity. All the movement from the last year can potentially act as a great catalyst for change. This will allow organizations to reassess their processes, reconsider team alignment, and allow for a more streamlined tax function. If they haven't already, tax leaders should take this opportunity to align with the overall goals of the finance function and broader business transformation that may be ongoing, and look at what the other areas that leaders are focused on within their organization, using this as a strategic leverage tool to advance transformation within tax.
I think it's a really interesting insight that these digital technologies, they're not only improving internal process execution, but they're also enhancing external customer experience as well. So it's enabling the business to focus on these strategic priorities. It's really a win-win for both parties. I find that incredibly interesting. Next up, let's consider how companies are making changes to their strategic planning based on all of these changing business conditions. So, Eileen, can you provide an example of how companies are responding to all of these changing business conditions, including policy, and business changes, as well as all the environmental, social, and governance factors that we all need to be considering.
Companies are very focused on scenario planning and expanding their capabilities to react quickly to those policy shifts and business changes. As Dom has already mentioned, the importance of digitization continues to be a high business priority, and many companies are adopting digital technologies, such as analytics tools, to be able to generate real-time insights and make better informed decisions. Company initiatives around culture, value, and purpose will be just as important as organizations are shaping their future of work programs. Almost half of the business leaders say these initiatives will differentiate them in a competitive market for talent. With regards to ESG goals, a majority of executives, 57%, also said they are focused on advancing internal diversity and inclusion efforts over the next 12 months. Other areas of focus for companies include rethinking communications on the company's purpose to attract and retain talent, so that all applicable roles and positions can take advantage of these programs, and aligning the messaging of the programs with the overall employee value proposition, improving reporting to external stakeholders on ESG, with all of these options being selected by almost 45% of executives. Companies will also look to improve reporting to external stakeholders on ESG issues, with all of these items selected by the respondents as things they will do. Fewer executives, only 36%, are looking to work with other organizations on community issues. I think ESG will continue to be a huge focus for investors, customers, employees, and other stakeholders as they really try to understand the values of the business. Thinking and acting upon ESG initiatives is becoming a growing business imperative, with the demand for much more transparency and heightened disclosure requirements, including tax-specific disclosures. Companies are also very focused on managing reputational risk as a result of these.
I completely agree that planning initiatives are top of mind for businesses as they're looking to make changes and adjust to new ways of working in this really fluid environment. And I'm also hearing that ESG is a top priority for many businesses, and tax really needs to be part of this strategy. So tax, I see them working with the C-suite to manage the risks related to public disclosure of tax positions and integrate into the company's larger ESG strategy. So as we move along to the next area of focus, Dom, you mentioned operating and business model changes as another strategic planning initiative. So would you expand on why organizations are focused on operating model changes as a strategic initiative and how this initiative is impacting the tax function?
Through our survey, we learned that almost one third of all respondents said that their company's reassessment of their operating model was a strategic opportunity. And when we talk about operating model, I just want to make sure we're clear in terms of what we're discussing. When we discuss operating model, we're focused on where does the work occur, who's doing it, and how is it being accomplished, i.e. what tools and technologies are being used. Throughout the pandemic, companies are evaluating the effects that it's had on their internal operations, including across various functions, tax being one of them, and determining what processes, technology, and resourcing models could be improved. Companies are also considering different operating models to fit their changing workforce and technology needs, as well as new ways of working. These operating models include in-house models, co-source models, outsource models, and fully managed service function models. Through our survey, we learned that as organizations are considering these models, they're including a number of changes that are specific to the tax model. Specifically, they're thinking about moving from an in-house tax function to something that's more of a strategic co-sourced or outsourced model, moving from an in-house tax function to a shared service-enabled function, or looking at how to leverage technology, various shared services, automation, better processes, and outsourcing to complement their entire tax function and the processes that are in place. I encourage all tax leaders to really evaluate their tax operating model and consider how your operating model design can help you become more agile and respond faster to changes while lowering costs and risk to your organization.
Thanks, Dom. And the reality is that companies and their internal functions are always needing to reassess their models and reassess how they're doing work And an agile operating model makes it easier to adapt quickly to all of these changes that we're experiencing. So shifting gears slightly, the remote work environment brought on by the pandemic has challenged many companies to make very strategic business changes, but it also has employees rethinking their work location. So many employees have moved away from their pre-pandemic work location and are now in new destinations, or they've spent months away from quote unquote home, because the remote work has provided them some new flexibility that they may not have experienced before. So accounting for these employee location changes and its impact on their business, it's proven to be quite a challenge. So Dom, can you briefly touch on how organizations are accounting for employees who are working remotely now?
Absolutely, Margie. So no surprise here, 75% of tax respondents said they're accounting for the implication of employee work location who are either working remotely across state or country borders in some way. Within that grouping, more than half are considering corporate tax nexus and or employment tax matters when creating rules around who can work remotely across borders and potential salary adjustments for fully remote employees. 30% of respondents said they're considering tax implications for business travelers, and one quarter are adjusting for tax withholding for the remote work period.
That is a lot to consider as companies try to manage the tax impacts of their employees' work locations and make sure that they're considering those work locations very strategically. So Eileen, Dom, this has been a really great discussion with a lot of great insights. And in closing, what would you say are the key takeaways for our listeners? Eileen, why don't you get us started?
Thanks, Margie. I'd like to add on to what Dom has already said in terms of how companies are accounting for the tax considerations of remote workers. This is a major tax compliance issue for many organizations. Companies will need to have a much broader strategic view, and there isn't one group within an organization that can do it all. We have found that cross-collaboration with tax is more critical than ever so that organizations can avoid the risk of any unanticipated tax assessments or audits while resources are often stretched very thin with other work. Tax is a very critical stakeholder when defining the guardrails or the rules of these future of work programs. And when I say guardrails or rules, it's what will be permitted and what would be considered an exception or something for further review. Really a cross-functional team, including HR, global mobility, legal, corporate tax, and payroll, will likely need to break down the silos and come together to create an effective policy to manage these risks as they support a hybrid and remote work strategy. Rather than getting feedback on the back end after implementation, organizations can allow tax and these other functions to come into the conversation early to develop these appropriate guardrails for those identified risk and compliance areas. As companies begin to operationalize their programs, the review and approval process needs to be clearly defined. For example, will tax be involved in the review of all employee requests for hybrid or remote work, or just those outside the defined rules? Companies are also considering how they will know, track, and even determine where their employees are. Obviously, this is a safety issue, but also for compliance purposes. While some companies are looking to have the employee update their address in the HRIS system within a defined period of time, others are using vendor tools like PwC Anywhere to help support these programs, including payroll considerations. And others are even building internal tools to track and manage their population.
So Eileen, what I'm hearing you say is before I hop in my RV and hit the road, I should probably check in with somebody first.
Absolutely, yes, Margie. Absolutely.
All right, Dom, what would you like to leave with our listeners?
In thinking about hybrid work, remember to consider your culture and how your employees have reacted to remote tools to date. Eileen brought up culture earlier on. It really is a powerful topic that we need to take into consideration. Because as more workers begin returning to the office, careful attention to change management will be essential for bringing everyone through this journey successfully. Even after almost 2 years of remote working, hybrid arrangements are new for most companies, and we're still dealing with some of those challenges associated with that. For the tools to be really effective, the culture and behavioral shifts have to be there as well. A culture of innovation can thrive in any type of work environment, but it won't arise overnight. Rather, it's a long-term process that results from continuous and sustained effort.
excellent takeaways for today's discussion. So thank you, Eileen, and thank you, Dom, for your time today. And thank you to our listeners for joining us. We look forward to engaging with you as we tap into tax.
This podcast is brought to you by PwC, all rights reserved. PwC refers to the U.S. member firm or one of its subsidiaries or affiliates and may sometimes refer to the PwC network. Each member firm is a separate legal entity. Please see www.pwc.com/structure for further details. This podcast is for general information purposes only and should not be used as a substitute for consultation with professional advisors.